Our first speaker, Joanna C. from Dallas Quarter.
Hi, my name's Joanna, and I'm an addict. I'm grateful to be here, I'm grateful to be alive. And as most of you guys know, Alan and I were married for a period of time, and when we were talking about this workshop and what we were going to talk on, because we have a great relationship, we were talking about this workshop, and I was calling it Giving Back, and it's called Giving It Back. So I decided that I was going to talk about giving back, and Alan was going to talk about it. So he's going to talk about the spiritual it, and I'm going to talk about giving it back. And so that's kind of how we decided to framework this entire workshop. But like I was going to tell everybody that if you wanted the dynamic speaker with the testimony and the amen and you got it, girl, and stuff like that, I recommend going to Karen's workshop. It starts in about 10 minutes because that's not me. But I can share my story, and I can share my experience, strength, and hope, and I can try to do it as honestly as I can. So that's pretty much that's what I have. It's not exactly this isn't really a strong suit of mine. But when I was reviewing giving it back, the first thing I thought of was what was given to me when I first came in. And because if you're an addict, like I'm an addict, all I did was take. I didn't have anything to give. I didn't give anything. I didn't know how to give. And when I thought I was giving, it was more like manipulating in order to get something, so I would give something. And so when I first got here, you guys gave me rides. I mean, I had a car, but it was very not reliable. And you gave me, I remember people would buy my way into conventions, and you would give me T-shirts and things like that. And that was big, because I was so lonely, and it was just those little acts of kindness that was huge for me. You know, when I first And it was the things like that really helped me, I guess, start to realize how warm this place was. It was, you know, and he's actually, like, you know, pretty cool. I can come in here. I don't have anything to give. I don't even have to put a dollar in the basket. And you guys take me out to dinner, and you buy me coffee, and all you want me to do is call you. Wow, this is pretty cool. This is nice. Y'all are awesome. And I remember I went to a camp out, and you guys paid for me to go. I didn't have to pay to get in. You know, I had 4 days clean, and I probably couldn't even find the registration area if I had to. I could barely find the camp out to get there, and you paid for me to come in, and my sponsor gave me a T-shirt, you know, and it was really cool, and so I started thinking about what was given to me when I got here, And so I'm like, okay, well, that was a pretty small foundation, but it was really solid. And it was just the little things like that that kind of got me in the door and got me to stay. And then today, when I was thinking about the difference between giving it back and making Ninth Step amends, because my step work was pretty much all about, me helping the suffering addict, me showing up to my home group. And it was a lot of me, you know, me doing more, me, you know, me starting and stuff like that. And then when I finally got to my ninth step, I started making amends for the things that I was busy taking all those years. And then when I was done making my amends to society and making, you know, continuing to make financial amends and things like that, then my sponsor's like, you need to go one step further. And not only, okay, that's nice that you showed up for all of the, you know, clean up your neighborhood days and throw the trash in the trash can and things like that, but now it's time to go a step further. I want you to volunteer at a nonprofit organization. You know, give, since you don't have a lot of money to give, give your time, you know. And that's something that, then, you know, I'm like, well, what do I give? I just can't, stroke a check for a couple hundred bucks or things like that. And she really opened up my mind to giving back time, you know. So I volunteered for a place for a while and just typed out letters, you know, typed out correspondence, and then went to a, you know, the bagged up a bunch of my clothes and sent it to a women's shelter, you know, sent it over to the detox, made detox a commitment, not necessarily because I had a huge attachment to the detox center, but because that was just a stage in my giving it back process. And so that was, in kind of the whole society thing, another thing for me was I coached little kids, you know, little kid soccer. Not because I had a kid and I wanted them to succeed and do well and go out there, kick some ass, you know, take the world by storm, you know, you go get it. I mean, you know, like, I didn't have any kids. But it was just another way to kind of give my time back and to do it and not have any expectations of anything. They don't pay you to do that, you know. You take your own time and, you know, your own energy and, you know, learn the game and try to, you know, teach these children how to do it themselves. And so that's just my story, is I don't have a lot of money. I didn't have a lot of money to give, so I found other ways to kind of share my time, you know, within society. And so the giving it back to Narcotics Anonymous is pretty much the biggest way in which I continue to give back. And it started with, of course, it started with my home group. Obviously, because I didn't have, you know, any time to give back. I didn't have any experience, strength, and hope to share. In fact, my sponsor told me to shut up for the first, you know, 300 days or 300 meetings that I was in. She suggested me not share because I was sharing too much of the mess and not enough of anything else. But that's kind of how it was a little while ago, a few 24 hours back. So since she said, okay, well, when... I want you to start giving it back, but not necessarily with like, I was like, oh, well, I'll pick up chairs, you know, I'll pick up chairs. And she's like, well, that's a great start, but that's expected of you. If you sit in a chair, pick it up and put it away. You're not going to get a gold star for picking up the chair that you sat in during the 30, 60, 90 minute meeting and putting it away. You're expected to put your own chair away. You know, now you can go a step further by actually showing up and, you know, being the chair or being the secretary or giving out key tags or greeting people as they come in. You know, actually showing up early, helping set up the coffee when everybody's outside smoking up cigarettes and, you know, hitting whatever, going to, you know, bullshitting and chit-chatting outside. I want you inside, you know, cleaning up the coffee spills that everybody made. And everybody who picked up their cigarette butts, guess what? Go out there and, you know, even though we have an ash tray, an ash can, not, you know, a lot of cigarette butts still find their way on the ground and in the, you know, elsewhere. And she's like, go out there and pick them up. You know, pick them up. And I understand you want to go out there and hang out with your friends and go see who's doing what after the meeting, but that's kind of like, that's cool and everything, but if somebody doesn't pick up these cigarette butts, you're not going to have a meeting here because the church is going to throw you out. And so what she helped teach me was my personal responsibility. Kind of, I can't, you know, it's nice for me to confront somebody if they throw their cigarette butt on the ground, you know, but that's really not good. The bigger picture is that's not going to help me stay clean another day. it, you know, me, for me, I need to go out there and like do something, you know, instead of talk about doing something. I need to actually physically go out there and do it. And that's kind of what she started with. So with my home group, she suggested rotating through all the service positions. So doing pretty much all of them. And starting with a coffee maker so that way when the newcomer comes into the room, I can show them how to make coffee. Because somebody showed me how to make coffee. And I was like, well, coffee maker, God, that seems really boring. And, you know, getting there early is kind of like, I can do that. But, you know, this is really, like, kind of boring. I want to chat with my friends instead of make some coffee. And I don't even drink coffee anyway. Why do I need to make the coffee when I'm not even going to be drinking the coffee? I don't like coffee, ew. And so she was like, well, thanks for sharing, but guess what? That's the coffee gets made in meetings, in our meetings, and, you know, I suggest that you be the person to go make it. That way you can teach other people how to make the coffee. And and then I became very proud of my coffee making position, you know, when people be like, this is a good cup of coffee. I'm like, yeah, that's a good cup of coffee, isn't it? You know, thinking that I was proud of it. And the feeling that I got when I was proud of making that good cup of coffee, you couldn't have given to me. I had to earn that feeling. And I didn't know that when my sponsor told me to get that coffee making position. I didn't know the rewards that I was going to get out of it until 3 months later when that first person said, this is a good cup of coffee. And I was like, wow. And that's kind of... And that's what I suggest to my sponsees today. I'm like, you don't see the rewards of doing what I'm suggesting you to do until 3, 6, 9 months later. But really, if you want what I have, I suggest you do it. You know, I know you don't understand how that this is important, that handing out key tags is important, that reading from this little script that somebody typed up about how many, you know, clean days you get per tag and whatnot is important, but it really is. Because the commitment that you get behind doing this week after week, month after month, is something that you can't build. Nobody can hand it to you. And so that's... I was talking to somebody last night, and they suggested, they said, instead of calling it a service position, why don't you call it a service commitment? Because service position, it's kind of easy to step aside and let somebody else take up that service position. But when it's a service commitment, and I don't show up for it, that's a commitment I'm not showing up for. That's a hit that my self-esteem's taking, because I made a commitment to do something and I'm not doing it. And I said, you know what, because for me, a service position is a commitment, but the words that I say are, you know, that just helps validate it, and it's stronger, I think, for me. But so with my home group, I learned all of the positions and did them all, not because I liked them, but because I could help somebody else do them. And right now, I'm chair of my home group, and it's very odd because I've been here a few 24 hours and I haven't ever officially been chair of a home group. I have been chair of a lot of other service committees and extended regional things and things on a bigger scale, but when it comes to my home group, it seems like a lot of people really want that position. And so I'm the one that kind of, I step aside, let everybody have the positions that they want, and then I get whatever left over, you know, usually GSR, alternate GSR. The things that I'm from Dulles Corridor, and which is out in Virginia. And, you know, we actually had somebody from D.C. the other day come to our meeting to lead, and I was like, thanks for coming out. And he's like, well, you know us addicts, our book says that we will drive great long distances to support a meeting. And I said, you know, we're just out in Loudoun County, you know, it's not that far, but pretty much we're from Dulles Corridor. When you get to Dulles Airport, you just keep on driving west, and eventually you'll hit some of our meetings. And but it was... So I'd never had a a chair position. I'd always done it, and then usually a newcomer would come in, and they would want, you know, like my sponsor really hit, you know, get newcomers involved in service. And so I would always step aside and be like, you know, you need, here you go, you can have this service position. I'll go get one of those leftover service positions that nobody really wants to do, and I'll hang out and do that one. So I'm doing this chair thing, and I don't like, and I'm just being honest and telling my story, I don't like talking in front of people. And that's amazing that I'm actually up here, but me being up here is a means of giving it back. And when somebody asked me to do it, I made the decision that I was going to do it. So being uncomfortable, that's really nice and everything, Joanna, but it's not about me today. I can get up here and I can sweat and I can be uncomfortable and I can be scared and I can be nervous, but just for today, it's about you. You're the audience. I'm giving back to you. So, and which was another thing that was drilled into my head, that, you know what, Joanna, service is not about how you feel. You won't feel good doing service. When you get a call for at 1:15 in the morning to get out of your bed, to go help some addict that's shooting dope, that really needs to get out of some sort of abusive situation or some sort of other insanity, you're not really going to feel good getting out of bed at 2:15 in the morning, especially when you have to go to work the next day. But you know what? That's what we do, because that's what somebody did for us. And so service isn't, for me, giving it back isn't always about the way that I feel. And because, again, the rewards are on the other side. I don't see the rewards until 3 months later, 6 months later, 9 months later. And so at the time, I may not feel good about it, but I get up and I do it anyway. And so the people that I have met, having to get leaders for my home group, getting involved in service, and the people that I've branched out to, asking them to come out and speak, it's really made me, I mean, I have a lot of people on my phone, sure, I scroll through. I've got, you know, people, you know, my thumb will get tired scrolling through all the people, but how many people do I actually call? You know, I have a lot of people on my network. I know a lot of people, but making that one-on-one connection, not so much. And so it's really helped me branch out and get to, you know, meet other people. And then so after going to area service and learning some of those positions, I became involved in the regional service. And if you haven't ever been to a regional service, I would challenge you to go. It's nothing to be afraid of. It's actually kind of exciting. It's very humorous. And it's, you know, a good use of my time. And so I would go to, I was involved on the regional level at a lot of different areas and so on and so forth. But again, it was to have that experience for me, for making the commitment, obviously, to get the benefits out of it, but to also share it with somebody else. So when my sponsees asked me, what is this about? What is, they talk about this, what does this mean? What does this RCM position do? What does this, what are these flyers that I see, this H&I Learning Day? What is talking at a detox? You know, I have a year clean, well, what do? I'm able to explain to them what it is in my own words, my own experience. Then I can also, you know, got a local service in their, you know, trunk and say, here, read this when you get a spare moment on the bathroom. You know, this will explain everything you need to know about service on every level. But I can share with them, hey, this is what it's about. This is what I've gotten, you know, out of it. So, and then when our area hosted the convention, that was another layer of learning how to give it back. And what that opened my eyes to was the how amazing it is to have 5,000 or 6,000 addicts here in Ocean City for a weekend, and how much work it takes. All the behind the scenes, that you don't notice, that I never noticed when I came here. And I was able to, you know, go to the karaoke and, you know, sing my cutesy little songs and then go to you know, I mean, a couple of years ago it was EU, it wasn't P-Funk, so, you know, go there and see what's going on, get my picture taken, and smile, and go to the ice cream social, and, you know, chow down, and the banquets, and all of that stuff, and not really understand how much work it took to set up a banquet, and how much work it took to get the entertainer to come, and how many hours they're going to talk for, and how many hours they're going to entertain for, and how many contracts need to be signed in order to have that happen, and just all that boring, monotonous, tedious work to have 5,000 or 6,000 addicts come to Ocean City to be able to get a weekend of recovery. And that was the largest way that I have given back. And so what I'm going to leave here with is I'm going to challenge each of you to, you know, help give it back in some way that you haven't given it back before. Because that's where, you know, and if not for, you know, for myself and the growth that I get by learning a new service position, for the person that walks in the door when they ask you, hey, what is, you know, how does that guy get to be behind the registration table? What do you have to do in order to do that? You know, to be either say, you know, I don't know, or here, let's go ask them. Let's see what they have to do in order to do that. Let's see how much work that entails and how many volunteers it is. And so I want to, I just want to leave and say thank you. Obviously, you guys are here because you care about giving it back. Either that or your sponsor made you sit in some sort of service-focused workshop. And so hopefully you'll be able to give something, take something to your sponsor, say, I showed up and this is what they talked about. But that's, you know, that's about it from me. So thanks you guys for being here and thanks for letting me share.
All right, thank you, Joanna. Our next speaker is Alan Jay from Dulles Quarter.
Yikes. I probably don't even need that, actually. It's a small enough room. Hi, my name is Alan. I'm an addict.
Hi, Alan.
And yeah, you heard, let's see, give it back. Yeah, I'm doing the it. I appreciate that Joanna was doing the give it back part, you know, talk about service and all that kind of stuff. I have a service resume. I guess I could go through that. I was born when I was really young, and I killed myself with dope. And then eventually I came to NA and got clean, got a new life, and did service. The rest of it was the hard part. So I'm going to, actually, I really did, Joanna's like, so what are you going to talk about, and did you, like, stay up all night, you know, planning your, what you're talking about and stuff like that, and I'm like, no, not really, it's like giving it back. I'll probably do this, you know, NA is a spiritual program, in its most fundamental nature, it's a spiritual recovery kind of thing, and she went, oh, you're an asshole, you know. I stayed up all night. I was writing an outline. I was practicing in front of the mirror trying to get this, you know, and you're just going to get up and wing it, you know. I hate people like you. And I'm like, you know, well, you know, hey, we got what we got. All spiritual awakenings have some things in common. Common elements include an end to loneliness and a sense of direction in our lives. An end to loneliness. Yeah, I actually haven't gone there. You know, I probably haven't been clean long enough to know what that means. I've been clean for a while, but a sense of direction in our lives, that's actually where I'm going to take this one. And the reason I'm going to do that is because the spiritual side of Narcotics Anonymous and the spiritual side of getting clean is that we're doing something that is beyond our understanding and our capability of doing. That's really the bottom line. It is getting outside of our understanding, not just outside of ourselves to be able to help somebody else, but I will say that just getting outside of myself is outside of my understanding. the idea that I'm actually going to sit down and try and be present in an interaction with anyone else to find out what it is that they are going through and what they think and what they feel so that I can relate back and we can have like a real live interaction is like just outside of my comprehension. It's like, why would I do that? You know, I mean, why am I going to showing up for somebody else? I mean, I have hard enough time living inside myself to actually get outside of me to be able to find out what's going on with you seems to be sort of outside of my understanding. But in Narcotics Anonymous, we're actually called upon to do a lot more than just that. Because this whole getting clean thing, for example, it's like getting clean just for myself works sometimes because I don't like the consequences of using. So I want to avoid the consequences, so I'll get clean so that I won't have those. But this idea about getting clean so that I can become a productive member of society is like, that's like getting way outside of just sort of understanding. Because, you know, I'm not really sure on some days that I really like society. And being a productive member of a society I don't really like suggests that I'm going to wind up producing things that I only want to produce. And that I don't really want to do, and I don't really want to be a part of. And even if I like it, like, you know, most days, like 6 days a week, there's going to be at least one day a week when I don't like it. And so if I only do this thing 6 days a week and I don't do it one day a week, then I get high. And that doesn't work for me either, because then I get back to the consequences. So this giving it back and getting outside of myself in order to give it back kind of creates dilemmas. And I will just say that I have found that a lot. I have certain skills that I was born with. I don't think I did anything to deserve them. I am pretty good at getting up and speaking in front of people. When I was in eighth grade, somebody said, "Hey, you talk too much," or something. "You talk a lot," or you talk all the time," or whatever. Why don't you join one of these contests? And it was, we'll make you an impromptu speaker. And I was in Hawaii, and I'm like, yeah, what do I get out of it? And they go, well, if you win, you actually get a free trip to Maui. So we were on the island of Oahu. You get a free trip to Maui. You can spend a week there in this competition and, you know, get a chance to be able to see Maui. And I'm like, now we're talking, you know. And I mean, I was thinking Maui. I was thinking, do like I get a surfboard if I go, you know, because so I joined this thing, and impromptu speaking in competition sense, what they do is they give you a topic. It can be anything, you know, man who eats jelly beans farts in Technicolor or something. And you got 5 minutes to prepare a 5 minute semi-interesting talk about the topic. And it can literally be anything, you know. It could be from Nietzsche, the art of war. It could be anything at all. And you do that. And so I said, that sounds fun. So I did. And I won in a little island, you know, area. And so then I went to the, you know, the statewide, and I placed in the statewide thing. So it's a skill of mine. So getting up here and doing this is not service work really for me. And so now also I went to school and I liked things like, you know, I studied economics, I studied finance, I studied law, I studied that kind of stuff. And so coming into Narcotics Anonymous and working on service committees is not really service. I mean, it's service. The part that is service is getting up and going and doing it and showing up for the commitment. But the actual work part isn't like work part for me. In fact, it can be a problem for me. I remember once I got together with a group of people and we wrote a policy document for Nirvana. No, that's the Northern Virginia area of NA. They didn't have a policy document. They had a sort of a collection of y'all supposed to do this and y'all supposed to do that. But I thought, you know, somebody needs to structure this damn thing. And so we got together and we structured this document. We went through Robert's Rules of Order. We got it down, you know, how to make a motion, to have a motion, to be able to change a motion, to adopt a motion, to be able to, you know, motion to adjourn. And we got, you know, we wrote it all out, and it was this great sort of document, and I have since apologized for that. You know, I actually, I mean, I went back and made amends, you know. It was because, you know, it was, this is, what I was doing was I was creating something out of my experience, that was not really, I didn't have experience with Narcotics Anonymous and how NA service worked. I didn't have experience with the way volunteers get together and do kind of stuff. What I had was experience with the legal form of like, student government association kind of thing. And so that's what I tried to be able to interject to the best of my understanding and knowledge into Norvana's policy. Oh, my God. Well, anyway, and then I was part of the area service for a long time, so I actually had to live with my creation, which is perhaps the biggest punishment, right? You know, because, you know, for a long time we had to, until finally, you know, some people showed up and were like, we got to change this. We're pulling our hair out. We're not getting any business done. Oh, okay, so they wound up doing that. But my point there is that these are the kind of skills that I just sort of naturally bring to any organization that I join, any club that I've been a part of. I always sort of gravitate into doing that kind of stuff. And I just, that's what I do. You know, it's who I am and what I do. It's not really service. And I found that out, interestingly, not so much in Narcotics Anonymous as I found it out when I got the current job that I have. I work for a big organization now. I have finally percolated to the bottom. I don't know how that works. Anyway, I don't know if it's the top or the bottom or whatever, but I work for a big organization that does international humanitarian work around the world. And it is an awesome thing that I really like. I mean, I really like their mission. You know, I like what it is they do, and I'm really sort of personally committed to doing this kind of stuff. So it's kind of cool like that. I am also operating beyond my understanding. You know, I have a lot of skills. I've done this kind of stuff. I've been doing this for a long time. I was an economist for a long time, a senior financial analyst for a long time, an attorney for a long time. But when I go into work, I am like riding up the elevator going, oh my God, I have no idea how I'm going to wind up being able to do what it is I got to do. You know, because the things that happen, they show up, are like the buck stops with you. We need a decision. We got to do something. We got to go someplace. Somebody's truck blew up in Afghanistan. What are we going to do? You know, I was like, well, you know, call a doctor. I mean, why are you calling me? You know, but the fact is, somebody's got to do something. Decisions have to be made, and so often I have to show up and do things that I think is really the giving it back part, giving it back. Now, Joanna talked about making coffee. And she said, you know, making coffee can be giving it back. Yeah, it can be, absolutely. If making coffee, if it is outside your ability to be able to commit to showing up a half an hour early at a meeting every week to be able to get it organized and to be able to make the coffee, and if you don't drink coffee, but you know that you want to make good coffee, even though you don't drink coffee, you know, now we're getting to what giving it back really is. It is that willingness to be able to say, you know what, I am going to get outside of myself to be able to do that which is outside of my sort of normal everyday skill set. And I am going to show up and provide this for people. Kind of, and that is I am going to do the footwork and I'm going to leave the results to the universe. I'm going to leave the results, they say, leave the results to God. The other part of this spiritual journey that I was reading is just exactly that. It is, let's see, we may not understand why the world's the way it is, why people sometimes treat each other so savagely. That is something that's absolutely true. But we do understand suffering. And in recovery, we can do our best to alleviate it. And when our individual contribution is combined with the contributions of others, we are at last giving it back. So when our individual contributions are combined with the contributions of others, we are giving it back. And I think that is, as I understand it, the sort of fundamental spiritual heart of Narcotics Anonymous. We all do our bits and pieces to be able to help out. It is for real that on a 12-step call, one of the reasons why you never go on a 12-step call alone is because individually you probably don't have what it takes to be able to connect with somebody who needs to be connected with. Individually, you probably don't. You're going with other people because together we do. Together we can provide enough safety and enough security and enough breath to be able to show up to somebody and say, let's just sort of talk about what this recovery is. Now, I'm not talking about necessarily doing a formal, official, I'm getting paid for this and it's going to be on TV intervention. You know, and I don't know, I saw that, you know, intervention television show, and I was just dumbfounded. I am like, oh my God, I hope no addicts actually see this, you know, because I don't want addicts to do this kind of crap, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, that is, I mean, they are like paid professionals, oh my God, you know, and that's not my experience with 12-step calls. And so my experience with 12-step calls is that we show up and we just say, you know what, recovery is possible. Recovery is possible. I recovered. This is kind of who I was and what I went through. And I have found a safe place to be able to have some difficult conversations about what's going on with me, what's going on in my life, what goes on between my ears, what I think about, what I feel. I have found a safe place to be able to have those conversations with people. And in doing so, I take enough of the pressure off that just maybe for a while I don't have to go get high in order to be able to handle it. And even though chances are I want to get high, 49%, if I talk about it and relieve the pressure, I don't want to get high, 51%. And sometimes that's really all it takes, is just, you know, because at the end of the day, if 51% trumps 49%, you've won. You know, and so what we do is we come in here and we bring this sort of very simple message of, you know, be willing to be able to get outside yourself. Now, I suppose, besides just sort of talking about the fact that I have a job that is sometimes it feels beyond me and beyond my capability of doing, you know, I haven't, the hard part also about Narcotics Anonymous is that get real part, you know. It's the, yeah, but, okay, what do you really feel? You know, how are you really going to be able to show up? And I mentioned in the first part what I said, which was that all spiritual awakenings seem to have these two things in common. One was an end to loneliness. Yeah, you know, I seem to like that feeling. I seem to like carrying it around with me. And so what I do is I wind up wrapping my life up in ways where I wind up doing very alone stuff a lot. And what I found the other day was I got to a point where my workload had ended. My inbox was finally kind of emptied out. My to-do list was mostly dealt with, or everything I could do. And I had a little panic attack. I was like, oh my God, what am I supposed to do now? Now that my inbox is done, you know, I mean, I define myself as a human doing, not so much a human being. So now that I no longer have something to do, it's like, and I felt like, oh my God, I've become redundant. I've become, you know, my time is up. I mean, I don't know, you know, maybe I'm supposed to like check out or something. I had that panic attack just sitting there in my office going, you know, I wonder if maybe, just maybe, I am getting all of my emotional needs met by being here at work. And so, you know, when I finally ran out of something to do, now it's like, oh, frack, you know. The only thing I can do now is start feeling all those feelings I have been pushing away and pushing away. And I didn't want to do that. I just, and it's not that I don't do feelings well. I don't know, maybe, I don't know even what that means exactly. I feel them, and I feel them very deeply. And so, you know, I guess I do it as well as that is concerned. But the truth is, in many ways, I don't like them, you know. The reason is because it is yet another area where it forces me to get outside of me. And so my little panic attack was about, I need to grow and get outside of myself, you know. I need to be able to reach out to other people and realize that some of the stuff that I have been doing isn't really working for me. It's not really, it's not addressing some of the very heartfelt goals and dreams and desires that I have. And I was like, wow, maybe I can do some step work. Now, understand, let's be real here for a minute. I was not saying I wanted to do step work because I wanted to be able to address the feelings. No, I wanted to do step work to get out of the feelings. You know, I wanted to distract myself from what I was feeling. And so what I did was I started writing in my journal. And I started writing about the people that I care about, you know, the people that I love, and what it is that I get out of, you know, out of loving them. And then I thought, you know, I'm going to be having this conversation up here at the convention about giving it back. Maybe I should talk about what do I bring to these people? In other words, how do I address the things about them that I think that they want? Now, not, and so understand that these are two very different things. The first was, how do I feel about them? What do I get from what I feel about them? And that's a very sort of self-centered kind of thing. I like that. It's, you know, it's something that's sort of fun to talk about. I, you know, I like her because she's hot. I like him because, I don't know, I like, respect Kevin because he's out there kayaking. I think that's awesome. And I respect Huey because of what he's running this recovery place out in Winchester and White Post or whatever you call that place. And, you know, and I like my sponsor because he's, you know, he's always willing to show up and he's always willing to be a part of my life. And I, you know, but again, that's the what I like about them. And then it was the next part about, well, what do they like? And how do I show up in their life? That was a harder inventory and didn't come out quite so clean. It turns out that I don't really show up in people's lives a whole lot. A number of my friends are here, and you probably know that about me. I don't think there's any secret. And I apologize on some level for that, although, God, I hate apologies. I hate apologies not because, you know, saying I'm sorry is not something that comes naturally, but because saying I'm sorry without there being a sort of manipulative approach does not come naturally to me. You know, the fact is, you know, I'm sorry, now give me $20, I need to go buy a bag or something. You know, that's kind of what goes through my brain. And that really isn't what it is. I went over to see the Super Bowl at Kenny's the other day, and I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed that. Well, I haven't talked to you since, except to be able, you know. So giving it back, you know, sometimes the deal about that is, yeah, don't always give it back like I think I know I could and do and can. I don't show up like I know I can and like I even. Like I even want to. It takes me being able to get to a point of realizing that, you know what, of having an anxiety attack like I did at work, to be able to really open that up. And so I'm going to kind of try and bring all these little themes that I've put out there kind of together in the following way. And that is that... spiritual awakenings for me almost always seem to come from that sort of moment of, oh my gosh, my best efforts have sort of failed to be able to produce. My best efforts are not what's going to be able to carry the day today. Best efforts are not enough. My best efforts are not enough. And I need y'all. I need, you know, a miracle of some sort, another daily miracle. I need something to be able to kind of to do that. And that is exactly the getting outside of myself that gives me, that allows me to give it to somebody else. It is the getting together with somebody else. It's the two people or more going on a 12-step call where together we combine our efforts and we produce something that is bigger and better than any one of us. But because we are a part of it, we get to share that and we get to make it our own as we do it. And it is true in my daily life, as it is in my work life, as it is in my recovery life. It is the giving it back. That's the it, I guess, that I'm talking about. The it, the spiritual it that I told you I was going to try and talk about, it is that feeling of being a part of something that is bigger than I am. It is kind of realizing the vastness of the universe and feeling somewhat humbled and small by that. But on the other hand, of also realizing that I have a place here. You know, I can do this thing. I can do this life thing. And what that often means for me, though, is, and I can do this if, you know, there's always that little catch, at least it seems to me, I can do this thing if I'm willing to show up and make the commitment. So, again, it works. There is a spiritual give back that is possible only if you make a commitment or are willing to show up and do the commitment. So I am going to end this in the same way kind of that Joanna did. So I'm going to end this by challenging you to be able to get beyond what it is that you think is what you have to offer and go out there and do some service that is bigger and beyond what it is that you are comfortable doing. And you know what? Start small. I mean, start small. But the opportunities abound. Absolutely, they abound. And chances are it would be, for example, showing up at work with a reasonably good attitude. Now, that for some of us, that is almost beyond what is could be possibly and reasonably expected of us. So if that's true, then do that. Show up at work with a reasonably good attitude. I'm going to help this company show up the way the company wants to show up. Or for me, it's also about like calling family members. Don't have the best relationship with them. But calling family members and showing up to family members, not again the way that I want it to be, but the way that they want it to be. My mom has a vision of what it means to be a mom. Show up for my mom the way my mom wants to be a mom for a little bit. Get outside of myself and be able to do that. And being able to do that in my sponsorship family. I want to try and get us together to be able to say, hey, I get that you have desires and all about how you want to work a program. And you've heard my shit about working a program probably more than you. You're stuck with it. I'm your sponsor. And so... But let's show up and let's meet and let's talk and get to know each other and let's try and do some of this together, and because I think that's where the giving it back can actually show up both in my life and I suspect in yours. Wow, this is not ending on a high note. So what? Thanks for letting me share.